Good afternoon, everybody. We're still enjoying this great weather. I mean, I think you've probably picked the best trip of the summer. That will be my guess, because it's just been spectacular. We're still dealing with, when I'm calling feet on the ground, regal alaris, you know, that the idea of some issues which are really very basic. And last time we spoke a bit about business ethics, which is something that is pretty major in many, many people's existence, how to conduct business properly. And there's an element of this which I want to sort of talk about because it affects me directly. I'm not in business, you know, I'm in teaching. I'm a teacher by profession. But one of the problems that we've had in the last few years has been the issue of cheating. Cheating in school, in exams. There was a case which hit the national newspapers. It must have been either a year or 2 years ago that there was a Jewish school in New Jersey, and I know which school it was, where the students decided to set up a scheme for the SAT exam. And the SAT is an important exam. It's a preparation for college. And what they did was that they got the guy who finished the exam early, who obviously knew the answers, that he disappeared into the bathroom, and he started texting. You know, they play with the telephones, and he texted the answers to the students. It got found out. And when it got found out, this was really not a very happy situation. The school had to deal with it. And the question, of course, is, what does the school do? And there was an initial response, and then there's a much more difficult question of how to stop such a thing in the future. Initially, you can expel the student if that's the policy of the school. You know, different schools deal with this in different ways. But the big problem is, how do you stop it at all in the first place from happening? I now have to read out a prepared text before every exam that takes place in Yeshiva University, which says that there is a zero tolerance policy about cheating. And it spells it out very clearly, that if you are in any way caught cheating during this exam, you will fail the exam, I've forgotten how it goes, but it's more like your case will be taken before the academic board of the college, and it's very likely that you will not be attending the college in the future. So it's a pretty direct statement that is being made. And again, my guess is that this is a reaction to some of the events, the stories, particularly that were coming out of the yeshiva day schools. That was the most disturbing thing. There was, as I said, the school in New Jersey. There was another school in Brooklyn where the boys decided that they were going to deal with I think it was in a Regents exam. And what they did was, it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4:30 in the afternoon, and they said to the proctor who was looking after the exam, wasn't Jewish, they said it was a math exam. They said in the middle of the exam, we've got to stop, we've got to pray. So, you know, it's a yeshiva, so he doesn't know. He had to say, well, you've got to pray, you've got to pray. But what they decided to do was that in the course of supposedly praying, they were calling out the answers in Hebrew. They were actually giving the answer, Mispa Arba, Tshuva, you know, the number, question number 4, the answer is. And this again was unacceptable, and it got caught out. And it's a story, these are stories which are still coming out of different schools. And I say to myself, first question I ask is, why is it happening? Why is cheating like this going on? And obviously the bigger question is, and this is something that we can discuss, is what is our attitude? What should be our attitude towards these events? So the question why it's happening, I think there's a number of factors. And we're living in a world where the students will tell you, and if you talk particularly to your grandchildren who are going through college at the moment, they'll tell you that the world is a very competitive place. They'll say that, you know, they are constantly under pressure to achieve. And of course the question of what exactly they are meant to achieve, the bottom line of it always is about results. It's fascinating because I'm in a very unique position at Yeshiva, because there I'm teaching Jewish studies. And Jewish studies is not really going to be about your future career unless you're going to be in Jewish education. Some of the girls are. But more to the point, it's about what I call the learning experience. The fact that you're in a place like Yeshiva University or Landers or Touro, any of these colleges, right? Landers part of Touro, or any place like that is going to be to learn how to learn. Okay, and that's part of the process of being there. But very often they will say to me, Rabbi, when it comes to regular courses, you know, they've got to get a grade, they want to get a 4.0, what is it called, GPA or whatever the expression is, they're under terrible pressure. And this pressure leads some of them to do it in a way, to try and achieve it in a way which clearly is not acceptable. And one of the ways they think they can achieve their goal is by cheating. Right? They see that people in the world get away with it. So their attitude is, you know what, if they get away with it, then we can get away with it. And you know, sometimes there are role models that come out in this type of situation from movies, from TV shows. I'll always remember that character in Titanic. All right, there's two things I remember from Titanic. Number one is that the movie, I saw it in London. Those of you who've seen the movie will know what I mean. And I sat three rows from the front. The only seat that was available was three rows from the front of the movie theater. And that was a bad mistake. Because when the boat went down, I went down with the boat. It was so close to the screen, it was terrible. And my wife is desperate to go on a cruise. And I'm saying to her, under no circumstance, after watching that movie, am I prepared to consider going on a cruise? I keep telling her that. She doesn't believe me. I said it was traumatic in the extreme, because there I was on the boat. I was literally at the front of the movie theater. I sort of play along with this, but to be honest, I'm not very keen on going on cruises anyway. Some of you will obviously argue with me on that, but that's for another discussion. What the second thing I remember is there's this character who is this awful character who gets on the lifeboat and he steals his way onto the boat. Right? If you remember, I've forgotten another guy's name. And he gets away with it, and obviously he's saved. So many of the people are obviously do not get saved. They just had the memorial, the 100-year memorial for the whole thing. And again, it's like an image that stays in your mind of the character who is going to get through life by cheating. And this man does it, probably based on a real story, I don't know. And you know, there every so often you'll find this role model in different ways, somebody who sails through life being what they call in England a cad. A cad means a bad guy. Okay? These are obviously role models or messages which come through to young people to say to them, you know what, if you really want to push the system, maybe you'll get away with it. Maybe. Not always, but maybe. And that's point number one. Point number two, which I think is also very bad, is the whole issue of peer pressure. That they see that if their friends are doing it, they want to do it as well. And of course, then it becomes an epidemic. And if you have a school situation where everyone is sitting around and they're all saying how they can get away with cheating and systems, and they put in, you know, all different ways, like this idea of texting. And I think now schools have to ban. I mean, why they haven't banned the cell phone from the school completely, I don't know. I mean, you know, we've now been, what's the word? We've now been lulled into a sense that every single person has to have a cell phone. And of course, for security purposes, it's right. You want to be in touch if it's necessary, but that cell phone should only be usable in an emergency. What has it become today? People sit in the lessons and they're trying to concentrate, but at the same time, they're having a conversation with a friend, may not be in the same school, maybe someone in Australia. Who knows? And this is a serious problem. This is a problem in education in general. But in particularly in this issue, if they see that their friends have got a scheme going, for them to stand up and say, I'm not going to be part of the cheat, I'm not going to be part of this scheme, is a very, very difficult thing to do. You know, you're with a group that does it, you've got to stand out, not do it. And what's more difficult is that if you want to spill the beans, if you want to go and tell the teacher, want to go and tell the principal, then you're really not going to be a very popular guy. On the other hand, there's a standard. So what do? The third message, which is also very difficult, is the message from the parents. That very often they'll be home and a parent will say, oh, I dodged a bullet today. So what does that mean? Not a real bullet. I managed to get away with not paying a fine. All right, or I managed to get away with this or that or the other. Or I was being held on a certain, there was a certain problem that I had, and I managed to strike, you know, I struck a deal. All right, deals are fine, but sometimes you do it in such a way that you're actually seen, the parent is seen to be, for want of a better word, cheating the system. So if the parent does it, what hope have you got for a child who sees a parent doing something, and the child should, obviously the child's going to follow. That's what somebody said to me once. He said, a very wise rabbi, he said, listen, even if your kids are not necessarily going to follow your derech, your way, always be there as a constant model, a role model for them. Even if they're not going to be maybe as religious, or they're not going to be, you know, they're going to go in one direction, and you've gone in another direction. But if you're the role model, they see you learn. They see that you go to shul. They see that, you know, my son, to the age of bar mitzvah through high school, was not a great shul girl. He just didn't enjoy shul. And my daughter said to me a few months ago, it's very interesting, my daughter's 34 years old, married with 3 children. My son just got married last year, so there's a bit of a gap there. And she said to me, Daddy, she said, you know, you did a good thing with my son, with Yechiel. He's now a rav in a shul, he's become a rabbi. And it's a good story. And the reason why, I said, why did I do a good thing? I mean, I thank God, I'm proud of him. She said, you know what, you never pushed him to go to shul. When he wanted to go, he went. And when he didn't go, he knew that you were going. And he knew that he should have been there, but you know what? He's a kid. He's a teenager. Teenagers, sometimes they rebel, they're tired, a million and one excuses. But you continue, meaning me, I continue to be the role model for him. And of course, eventually, what happened? He got through high school, he went to Israel, he got really switched on religiously, and he got switched on learning. And Baruch Hashem, today he's working in a shul and will become, I'm proud to say, a very significant rabbi in the community. I really look forward to that, as he is already. And therefore, it's about setting that role model example. Even if it's not a direct example, if it's just by what they say osmosis, right? Which means that, you know, you're just showing the example indirectly. It doesn't matter. The fact is that that's what should be happening. And unfortunately, the wrong message is coming through to so many of our young people from their parents who say, oh, I got away with this. I managed to cheat on my taxes. And they have this discussion. They don't realize the kids are listening. And, you know, you're having this discussion. My favorite story of this is actually a Pesach Kron story. Rabbi Kron says that he heard a wonderful story in a kindergarten. And what happened was they had to have a Shabbos daddy and a Shabbos mummy. It was like, you know, 3-year-old kids. Abba and Ima. So what happened was this little kid, he put up his hand. Chassidish kindergarten. So he put up his hand and he said, Ich will sein der Abba. He wants to be the Abba. Okay, be the Abba. So they sat down to make Kiddush. And the teacher's looking at the kid, who he thought would pick up the wine and make a bracha, Brei Pri HaGofen. No. The kid starts holding his head and starts shuckling like this. And they say, what's going on? And the teacher just said, wait a minute, let's just see what happens. And the kid keeps on shuckling and starts mumbling. And they said, what is this kid saying? And under his breath they can hear the words, Is given a shvera voch. Oy, is given a shvera voch. Oy, is given. It's such a difficult week. The kid is copying his dad. Every time the father comes home for Kiddush Friday night, he sits there and holds his head in his hand and says, what a shverma, what a difficult week it was. The kid followed. And it's so interesting. It's like, it's funny. He tells it, Rabbi Kron tells this, and obviously with a lot of embellishment, but the reality is, you know, it's about role modeling. It's about sending that message. And even by just doing that, before Kiddush, look what a message came through to that little boy, 3 years old, that he copied it in the kindergarten. It's an interesting story. Bottom line, what is the Jewish view about all of this? It's simple. There is a concept called Geneva Stas. Geneva Stas means literally stealing another person's thoughts. You take a comment, the Rambam brings it, just to quote some of the sources, that Osel Ramot. The Rambam says you're not allowed to cheat, you're not allowed to swindle, and it can be even in terms of ideas. What nowadays we call intellectual property. This is a big problem in law. That somebody makes an invention, or somebody makes some sort of, you know, at the moment there's a whole court case going on in Israel. A writer called Naomi Regan, who is a very popular writer, a Jewish writer, was accused of plagiarism. She was accused of copying a whole chunk of her book from another author who sued her in an Israeli court. And at the moment, the court case, I think, was settled. But they've now appealed the result. In other words, this is a serious problem. The problem of Geneva Stas. Not just stealing, literally stealing somebody else's watch or somebody else's property, but stealing somebody else's thoughts, somebody else's ideas. This is a serious problem. And of course, when we talk about cheating, it really is an act of stealing. And if you think about it, you're stealing from 5 people in a school setting. Let's talk in terms of schools. Number one, you're stealing from the teacher. Because what is happening? The teacher wants to praise you for getting a good grade. And you are cheating to achieve a good grade. You've stolen from the teacher. The teacher thought you were a good student. And it turns out that you've cheated. You stole from the school because the school has given you a certain accolade. You know, you've got a certain qualification from the school, and you know what? You didn't deserve it. So you stole from them. You stole from the other students. Because the other students, you know what? Somebody maybe more deserving should have had the position, particularly in a grad school or in a college. They should have had your spot. You don't deserve to be there. So you stole from somebody else who could have been in college instead of you. And you stole from your parents. And we all know about tuition. And we all know the problems of tuitions and how high they are and how the schools are struggling. And you've gone and taken your parents' efforts of tuition and you become a cheat. What has happened? You basically stole from your parents. They put so much money, invested so much into you, and look what you became. And then ultimately you stole from yourself. Because you know what? That person is setting themselves a future which is going to be so dangerous. If you start cheating at such a young age and you start cheating in such a young circumstance, what's going to be with you 20 years down the line? What's going to be with you 30 years down the line? What sort of mensch are you going to be? And we don't need to go too far to understand what a problem this is. It's very, very serious. I cringe, I shudder, as I said last time, when I see sort of examples on the news, on the general news. Forget about reading the Jewish press. I love the comment, Rabbi Luchstein, not the one who's the rabbi now, his father, was always said that he was going to start buying the Jewish press when the English edition comes out, which was always one of my favorite comments. Those who read the Jewish press, I don't know whether you are, it's an interesting newspaper, let me put it that way. It's sort of English, but I'm not quite sure, even today. The reality is that, you know, you read some of the stories there, you can plot, you can go crazy. What do we say? A student will come and say to me, look, I'm only studying for the grade. I'm only studying to get this grade. What do I say to such a student? I get that very often. And I say to them, you know what? There is a concept of learning Torah lishma. Why can't you understand, or why don't you understand, that sometimes you have to go beyond the grade? I say to the girls that I teach, that coming to Stern College, you know, it always amazes me, the sort of girls that come there, because there's the obvious... That, you know, the girl whose grandmother was in Stern and the mother was there. So, okay, that makes sense. But there are some girls who are there who are very bright. And I say to them, what are you doing here? And they said they want to come here for whatever reason. And I say, but you know, you're bright enough. You could have gone to any Ivy League school. Yeshiva is not an Ivy League school. It thinks it is. It tries to copy it. It's a good school. But, you know, there are other schools that you can go to. You can go to Penn, whatever it's called there. And there are hundreds of Jewish kids there. And then Maryland, there's tremendous Jewish life. All of the schools have a lot of Jewish life. So I try to explain that coming to a place like Yeshiva or studying in Landers College for Women or wherever it may be, you're coming here for the learning experience. It's not about achieving the grade as much as it is about having the learning experience, being able to be in a tzibur, in a community that learns to such a level, because the learning level that they achieve is very, very positive. It's very exciting. It's exciting to teach a group of students that are so motivated. And I try and explain this idea. We said every day in davening that we pray to God that He will help us to study Torah lishma. We said every morning in the brachas. It's again, what is Torah learning about? It's not about necessarily the achievement, the grade, but it's about becoming a fully rounded individual, a person who can go out into the world and be confident about who they are. They've studied, they've had that experience, they've had that motivation to be in a Jewish school. That's something special. And of course, what happens is, the Rambam says, that if you really want to achieve this, you've got to go and essentially attach yourself to a community, live in a place or be part of a chevra that is positive, because the peer pressure should be positive. Rambam recognized this 800 years ago. We talk about this, if you go to college today and you study sociology, they'll talk about it all the time as being a new concept, the idea of the influence of the environment. The Rambam wrote about it. He wrote about it 800 years ago. And I'll just quote it because it's so interesting. He says like this. This is Maimonides in the 12th century. Derech b'riyoto shel adam. He says, the way of creation of man, liyot nimshach b'deotav, a person is attracted with ideas, ubemasav and actions, acharayav, by your neighbors, where you live, ubechaveirav and his friends. Noheg kimin hangan shei medinato, and he becomes like the people in the country. He follows the ideas. And therefore he says, Sarech Adam, Litchaber letzadikim. Where's the best place to be? Near to righteous people. That v'leishevet zel chachamim, and to be next to scholars. Tamid kadei sheyilmedu ma'asem, so you'll learn from their actions. Because if, you know, if you're ready, you've got peer pressure, and you've got pressure around you from the society. Be in a society where their positive role modeling is going on. And don't just look at the people around you who have to make lots of money, and the whole society is based on the idea of making money. Look at a society which has values. Look at a community where the values of chesed are so important, where the values of honesty, all these types of things, and you can find these communities. But it's a challenge. And clearly what we're saying over here is that people, maybe students, will turn around and say, but Rabbi, you know what? If I don't cheat, I'm going to lose a friend. The answer is, such a friendship is not worth having. If you think that that's what it's about, to have a friend by cheating, the Mishnah said it, Ava shena tuluya b'davar. If your love is depending on something, tuluya b'davar, then such a thing, once that matter goes away, the friendship dissolves. In other words, a person will use you and be able to cheat from you, and then as soon as they've achieved what they've done, they move on. Right, and this is always the story that you read in novels. You read the stories like this, and in life, you know, you've met people that sometimes abused you, and unfortunately abused, and then moved on. Right, and that's again something which is a big problem. And it's so interesting when you read the account of people who have been caught cheating. And again, I think of this gentleman, Mr. Madoff, and people like that. And you start finding out what was going on in their earlier lives. Did they conduct themselves? Did they get positive role modeling from a previous generation? And very often you start reading and you read between the lines. You begin to understand that a lot of this goes back to what they heard at home and what was going on at home. And home, school, etc. It's very significant. And of course, the whole issue, of course, the challenge for Jewish schools is a very big challenge. I sit there, I remember sitting there in England when I was involved in high school, and the parent would come in, and you'd have teacher-parent conferences. I'm sure you've all attended these things. And very often, you know, the problem today, I think, is compounded by a lot of things that people read. Parents want their kids to do well, that's for sure. But some parents have this idea that my child is the Chofetz Chaim. My child is Einstein. My child is, you know, the most brilliant young man or woman that has ever been created. And very often they come into a school and their expectation is that the school fulfills that particular aspiration. And for parents, I would argue, maybe what they should be looking for some of their children, number one, is a reality check. That maybe your kid is not so strong academically, but you know what? He's a good team player. He'll be good in chesed. He'll do well. You know, he may not be a professor in college, but you know, he'll make a wonderful electrician, a plumber, who can also make a parnasa these days, make a very good parnasa. There is a definite concept here of the Jewish school transmitting a value which is saying that every child, every student has a place, has an ability, and that ability has to be fulfilled realistically. My mother-in-law, Shabi Gesund, she started a school in London. This is now 35 years ago. She now lives in Yerushalayim. She's retired. And the school was called Kisharon. Kisharon is an amazing school. It's now grown to become five different campuses in northwest London. And she was very upset with the way the mainstream schools were dealing with children with special needs. They could have been physically handicapped, they could have been mentally handicapped, they could have been just learning difficulties, like nowadays we know so many cases. And she started a school in Golders Green in London, 1976. And this school just took off. And what she did is that her argument, her basic philosophy was, Kisharon means ability, a Hebrew word. She said that every single child, be they, you know, strong in academics or weak in academics, whatever it may be, has a kishon, has an ability. And what her job will be in this school is to find the place for these particular students, the ones who have more challenges, how to integrate them into mainstream sometimes or into work situations, some of them better are doing manual things, some of them more able to do more mental thing, whatever it may be. And this school has been a phenomenal success. It really has. And why it's been so interesting is that not only does it make a statement, it also broke a taboo. The taboo was that until 1970s, in London, people, unfortunately, who had children who were challenge, whatever challenge it was, and were not part of the mainstream, were sent away from home. And this was a very difficult situation. I know it happened here, and it was all about the shidduch, that you're worried that the, you know, they have a brother and sister. Are they going to find someone to marry? Because once they find out that the brother is not, you know, they have a sibling who's not so capable. All of this mentality. My mother-in-law said, this is ridiculous. Because the reality is that those children who are sent away sometimes are put in situations where they become absolutely non-productive. And her philosophy to this very day is that every single student can be productive. And the successes of the school are amazing. I mean, you talk to anyone from London, they'll tell you about the Kisharon School. They will rave about it. And there are schools here, the Sinai program in New Jersey, there's a Yachad program, all these different programs, all on the same lines. They all say that, you know what, children are not all going to be Einstein. We know that. Even though we want them to be, even though we think they are. But let's find something for them to do. Let's find their, let's help them to find their place. And this again is one of the big challenges of the school. To help a child, not that the child feels they have to cheat in order to get into a successful position. You help the child to achieve in other ways. And that, I think, is one of the big sort of bigger picture issues of education. A child once said to me, what's wrong if I do it every so often? I don't cheat in every exam, only once in a while. So again, there's an interesting halacha. The Rambam says it, asur lignov kol shehu, din Torah, it says the law of the Torah, you can't steal at all. Remember, genevat dat, this is called stealing when you cheat. And it says, v'asur lignov deres chok, if you want to steal in a way of a joke, you're making a galechta out of it. O lignov amanat lahachzim. You're stealing, but you're going to give it back. All right? Maybe. O lignov amanat lashalem. You're stealing, and then eventually you're going to pay for it. He says, all of this is forbidden. Kol asur shelo yargil atzmo bekam. Don't make yourself get into a habit to do this. Because once you start taking without permission, then you know what's going to happen. The next thing you'll start taking, and you won't pay back. And you won't give it back. And of course, one bad thing leads to another. Interesting argument somebody once made to me. What about passive cheating? I'm not cheating, but you know what? I'm going to help the other person to pass the exam. I'll leave my book on the side and they can look over and see the answer. I'm not doing the cheating. I'm just facilitating it for somebody else. Very interesting argument. The answer is, I'm sorry, unacceptable. The fact that you are passive, remember the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is, we read a few weeks ago, all right, he's not living with his wife anymore, okay, and along come Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron, and they complain. They said that, you know, we live with our husbands and wives, so why are you holier than us? And they say Lashon Hara. Well, it's interesting, who says the Lashon Hara over there? Is it Aaron or is it Miriam? Who speaks over there? Miriam speaks, not Aaron. And Aaron is blamed. He's included in the whole story. Why? And the because he listened, because he heard it. And he didn't say anything. And that was considered to be wrong. Interesting. Passive. He's not doing anything. He's just sitting there. And he's hearing a bubamaisi. He's hearing a story. And he sits there. And a zok gunish. He doesn't say a word. And that's wrong. Being passive in cheating is not acceptable. You'll say, oh, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just helping somebody else. No. Because what you've actually done is, you know, in the end of the day, by standing there and being part of the problem, helping towards the problem, you've actually been, as far as we're concerned, you are in the problem. When somebody says Lashon Hara, three people are affected. The person who says it, the person who receives it, and the person about whom it's spoken. They're all considered to be affected by the act of speaking badly. And even the one who's spoken about, who's passive, doesn't even know. They're still affected because when the rumor starts going around, the rumor mill, the next thing you know, we all know what happens. It gets into the papers and it's a crazy world out there. And there is no question about it that in order to facilitate this, even if you think you're doing it passively, right, as they say, still not acceptable. The bottom line, and this is why this is so important, and we're going to get back to something that we spoke about on Monday. We spoke about the idea of being honest. Honesty is about the bottom line for the Jew, for the Jewish person in the world, is about Kiddush Hashem. If I switch on my radio and I hear about someone who's been cheating in business, or I hear about students who've been cheating in an SAT exam, and I'm told that this is coming out of a yeshiva, It's coming out of a Jewish institution. It's coming out of someone who's famously involved with the community. Then my immediate reaction is, oi, what a chilul Hashem. What a desecration of God's name that really is. And again, I'll read you the Gemara, the famous Gemara, which says, mi shekore, someone who learns, v'shoneh, v'mashamesh tamid chachamim, it can even be someone who's close to rabbis, v'ei masa'o matano be'emunah, but he doesn't do business honestly. He's not an honest person. There was a terrible case about a year ago, of a gentleman who was running a very big yeshiva in Monsi. And unfortunately, he also got involved in conversions. Maybe some of you will know this story. And this is a big problem. It's a big problem because what happened was he got sort of very involved with one of the converts, one of the women, and it became terrible, terrible chilul Hashem that came out of this whole thing, that it wasn't being conducted properly, the conversion, and unfortunately the man is a charlatan and he's been exposed as such. There was those of you, I don't want to talk about Monsi too much, Monsi, New York, but there is the famous chicken fiasco a few years ago. A gentleman who for years was selling meat and it wasn't kosher. And this was going on for years. And there's a very strange coincidence. My father-in-law, Zichron Livrocha, when he moved to Israel 5 years ago, started, unfortunately, as soon as he gave up work, he was working really in England right to that point, he was a professor of computers. He gave up work and then his mind started to shut down. It was really very difficult. And one of the things that he still loved to do was to learn. He loved to learn Gemara. He did Daf Yomi for many years. And, you know, the easy thing was you could learn the same page with him because every day, because he forgot it from one day to the next. But my mother-in-law was desperate to find someone to learn with him. So the neighbor where they were living in Yerushalayim offered to learn with him. And it was a nice offer. And, you know, we met the guy and he told me his name. And there was a little bell that went off in my head. And I wasn't sure who this guy was. So I said to my mother-in-law, you know, who is this guy? Oh, there's something, he comes from America. There was some story, but I don't know the story. So I did a bit of digging. This is the chicken guy, the guy who came from Monsi. He ended up in Yerushalayim, and he was learning with my father-in-law. To his credit, he was doing a bit of kapora, at least at that point, right? He was trying to sort of help somebody out. And he really did try his best. But I never broached with him this subject, because I cannot understand how the man could sleep at night. If he has been involved with cheating, literally cheating people in terms of kashrus for all those years, how was it found out? Because people started tasting the chicken, it wasn't salty. If you taste the kosher chicken, you'll know that it's salty. It's been salted in the butchers. And these chickens were not salted. And all of a sudden, somebody started saying, well, it's strange, what's going on? They made inquiries, and the next thing you know, it hit the newspaper. Unbelievable story. And there was... Sorry? And I know the man. I've met this guy. It was unbelievable. I mean, his wife divorced him and she stayed in America. He remarried in Israel. He's got another wife. He's sort of reinvented himself a bit. And I don't know what to say. I'm in two minds about the whole thing. I'm not in two minds about what he did. That was wrong. That is absolutely unacceptable. As I said, I don't know how he sleeps at night. He was very kind to my father-in-law, I have to say. So do two rights make a wrong? Wrong make a right? I don't know what to say. I'm sort of not passing judgment. You know, that's for the Rebbeinu Shlomo. God can pass judgment. A kind of final thought, because this is a very painful subject. The subject of cheating, as I said, well, I'm going to go back to basics. I think it's behoven on us as role models, even if we're not teachers, even if we're not in a position that we involve with a lot of students, but we're still role models, we're still parents, we're still grandparents. And as grandparents, the kids really do look up to you. And as I said on Shabbat, the grandparent is in a unique position. Number one, that you exist, because when you were growing up, you know, certainly when I was growing up, I'm post-war. So, you know, so the people in camp generally are pre-war. But post-war, you had a situation where there were no grandparents to look up to, because either they'd been killed in the Holocaust or whatever. They, you know, the whole mortality rate was very, very bad. People died very young. I had two grandmas, my grandfathers I never knew. Right, and there was no one to look up to, a Zaidi that you could look up to. My grandchildren today, they've got a Zaidi. They've got the Baruch Hashem, they've got all their Zaidis. And they're looking up to us, and it creates a pressure, but at the same time, it creates also responsibility. And I think this is really where it begins. If there is this problem, then you've got to go back. really to the communities. You've got to go back to the schools, you've got to go back to the school, and say to this that there's got to be a wider awareness. They've got to make us aware of the problem, that we can then act on it in terms of our relationship, not just with our children, with our grandchildren. And I think the grandparent has a tremendous role to play in this. To say to the grandchild, you know, that this is not a way of getting on in the world, that thank God you can make it without having to cheat your way through life. And the fact is that there is pressure. Of course, there's financial pressures today which are very high, but it's not worth it. You have to explain that at the end of the day, to make an honest parnasa is really such a great and such a positive thing that you can do. And make a Kiddush Hashem. Explain the idea of Kiddush Hashem. That people do look at you as a Jew. Particularly if you're a religious Jew, you stand out. And their expectation of you is very high. So to let the side down by cheating and by being dishonest is just unacceptable. It's a zero tolerance situation. It can't be allowed. And I think if that's going to happen, and educationally it starts going back to the home, and even when the child is very young, and you know, sort of young kids can be taught lessons in a very kind of very simple way, then maybe we can get ourselves away from this. I don't want to ever hear again another case like I mentioned to the beginning of how students became so smart that they tried to outsmart the SAT inspectors and whatever by doing this business with texting. I think that was just an unbelievable story, and it was a very, very serious problem, and that school had to make some very serious repairs. Let me finish with the bottom line. The bottom line, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Gemara and Baba Kama. Rabbi Yochanan said, Kola gozles chavera, shave pruta, to steal even a small coin, right? Even a dime, ki ilu notel nishmato mimenu, it's as if you've taken away his life when you steal from somebody. That's a very strong statement. And stealing is not just about stealing money, it's about stealing ideas, it's about stealing words, thoughts, what we would nowadays call cheating. The Jewish approach is absolutely clear. Nothing more to say. Any comments, please?
So, one of the comments, she says that you will bring up the story of Rivka and
Yaakov Esav. Yeah. Yeah, and that's a great question. And the answer is, let me just give you one approach, because it's fascinating. The story of Rivka, when with the blessings, right? The whole story of the brachot. And what is so difficult is Yaakov is supposed to be the standard of truth, and all through the story, it's the opposite. So I saw a very, very unique commentary, I've just got to get it clear in my mind, where it says like this, that what was going on there was that Rivka was telling Yaakov to do what he did to prove to his father how gullible the father was. It's a very interesting approach. Yitzchak is an older man, right? It says he was going blind. He was gullible. So what was he gullible about? About Esau coming along and being the person that he really wasn't. Esau was really cheating all the time. But Yaakov was there to try and prove it to his father. He couldn't just go to his father and say, Abba, you know, Esau is a cheat. Because his father would not listen. You know, that's always a delicate situation in families. So what Rivka did, she's very smart. She got Yaakov to act as a cheat, to show Yitzchak, you know something? I'm actually very gullible. I could be cheated. And if Yaakov, the good guy, is cheating me, then maybe the other son is also cheating me as well. And you see what happens as soon as the penny drops in the story. It says, Vayechera, Yitzchak started trembling because he realized, oh my goodness, maybe, you know, is Gedreit Mein Kopf, you know, he drove me crazy all this time. He was claiming to be one thing, and he really wasn't. And then he says, Gam Baruch Yeh, whoever got the blessing should be blessed. It's very interesting. So Yaakov was put in a position which looks like he was cheating, but he was there to make a point. Now, is that acceptable in every situation? No. But in that situation, it really had a... I thought that was the smartest... I don't remember who says that. But it's a very smart interpretation, and maybe turns the whole thing around. He's not really cheating, he's just there to prove to his dad how gullible the father really is. The father can be, you know, obgenat, he can be cheating on. Yes. I hope that works. Think about it, it's an interesting interpretation. Yeah. Yeah, everything is easy. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's... Yeah. And it is getting worse. And again, a lot of it is coming from the pressures. You know, as parents and grandparents, we understand that we want our kids to succeed, but we've also got to let them do it at their own pace. If we're pushing too hard, I work in a place which is very high-powered in terms of academics at Columbia. A lot of from kids there. And they are constantly in a state of tension. Okay, most of them cope with it, but there are some I see are really suffering. They really shouldn't be there. They should be in a place which is giving them more time to study, you know, going at a slower pace. In Colombia, they're doing exams more or less every week during the whole of the semester. I can't get over it. How many examinations they have to study for, and term papers, and writing all the time. And some of the kids can handle it. A lot of them have been pushed there because the parents wants to see the child graduate from the school so that they'll get a good job, a good paranossum. But you know, sometimes you can go to another school at a slower pace, still graduate, and still get a good paranossum. And there is a mindset here which is very difficult. Sorry? It's not a degree, but you know what? If that kid or young man or young woman are determined, they will succeed. If they're given the right sort of environment to succeed in. There's sometimes a lot of pressure. I know, and that's something that, I agree with it, and that's part of what I'm saying here is maybe the problem. It's not the absolute reason, but the pressure. The pressure both from parents and peer pressure from their chevra as well. And that's a very difficult thing. It's very hard, you know, we're talking about a very serious problem here. Yeah. 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 Ah, yeah, I kept this more in a school environment, but clearly it's got ramifications in so many other places as well. Your point is a good point, but I think, you know, one can see where the same idea. Yeah. Yeah, what about them? Nothing, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and this is a... The answer is that this is part of a bigger, bigger problem, which I really don't want to touch on too much, which is the problem of accountability in the religious community particularly. So many cases where people are not being held accountable for what they should be doing. And this is a problem we know in terms of what's going on, of reporting dangerous situations, abusive situations, they're not being reported. It's a much bigger issue, and it's all part of the same problem. That, you know, when you feel you get away with it, or you feel you don't have to, for whatever reason, that they're all different logical reasons that are given, but the bottom line is, you've got to not only be honest, be seen to be honest, but you've got to be honest as well. You know, it was in both things. The tzedakah thing is just too massive to deal with. You always feel you need to give, but on the other hand, how honest is the person who's coming to you? As I said, all I quote is the story that I mentioned to a number of people, the 21-year-old, if I mentioned it last time, I don't know, who stood up in my shul, must have been about 6 months ago, coming from Israel. 21-year-old boy. He gives a clap on the table and he says, "I'm here to collect charity, stock." I said, "We all said, for who?" He says, "For me." I said, "You're 21 years old. Did you ever go to college? Have you studied? Have you got any plan to develop your own parnasa?" And his whole life plan was to live on handouts. It was amazing. He said that, "I'm going to live, I'm going to study, and when I need money, I'll go and collect in America, or I'll go to Europe." Unbelievable. Where is that coming from? That is not a Yiddish derech. It really isn't. Rambam writes about people live on stocker. Wow. and that's a Rambam that they don't learn in that world. It's scary. It's scary. And it's back to the me, it's me generation. And when kids get married, their expectations are very high, that they want everything straight away. You know, it's all part of that bigger picture. But this is becoming now a very serious problem in schools. You know, when it hits the national headlines that a Jewish school, the kids have been texting and been caught cheating at SATs, that's a wake-up call. That's a wake-up call for the community. It's a serious wake-up call. Sorry, Mr. Katz, I'll come back to you in a second. Yeah. It covered it up. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But that's why, but what are we saying here?
Rabbi, the children covered up for 20 years.
Yeah, and we always thought it was the Catholics. They had the problem, and we've had the problem forever.
2 weeks ago before the trial, then the gentleman who's in charge of the finances in the yeshiva called up the mother and father of the child. Please see me.
Yeah.
I don't want nothing, just not with your lawyer.
Yeah.
And no tape recorders.
Yeah.
He goes over to him and says, you are worse than Hitler.
Yeah.
He wants to destroy the Jews, and you're going to destroy the yeshiva.
Yeah.
They're suing for $3 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to get a judgment.
Yeah.
The yeshiva will close.
Will close. And you know what? Maybe the yeshiva deserves to close. It really does.
For 20 years they covered up.
They've covered it up. Correct. Correct. Yeah, and it's a problem. It's a social issue. I've got to say, in defense of the yeshivas, these are exceptions rather than the rule, but it's becoming not just one isolated case, it's now becoming a number of isolated cases, which become a trend.
There is always a good guy who will collect 20, 50, 60 families and go to court protect the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he feels that it's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and all of this, it's all the same problem. It's all coming down to the same issue, and it's very distressing.
And you know, I cannot say it's Lashon Hara. It's Lashon Hara.
Yeah.
They don't know that protect a child is not...
It's not about Lashon Hara. It's about protecting a child. It's as simple as... Bekoch Nefesh, it's really, literally, can be life and death. I know. I'm pleased the reaction has been the way it is, because it is a very serious issue. And as I said, although we kept it in the school framework, it's got much bigger ramifications. It really does have.
I don't want to take time, but I want to show you that you are separated from the real thing.
Oh. Yeah, I'm accused of that sometimes. I try not to be.
2 years ago, I went over to one of the biggest Russian Jews.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem of shidduchim.
Please do like my rabbi does. Under the chuppah, he tells the bride and the groom, you listen to me, you at least have 50 friends, the girl.
Yes.
Have 50 friends. I command you, not I ask you, that in 12 months you should make one shidduch.
One shidduch, yeah.
You know what he said? I like the idea, but I cannot do it.
Yeah.
Because somebody else won't do it.
Yeah.
And my rabbi does.
And it really should be, every rabbi should be doing that. Okay. You're absolutely right. It starts to do the pressure in the right direction, not in the wrong direction.
Right.
And that's what I'm asking for here as well. And I think that pressure...
I know.
But I really, as I said on Shabbos, I think that sometimes kids listen to grandparents more than they listen to their parents.
Yes.
And sometimes one can get this message across to a grandchild, and it can be a message for life. And that's really precious. It's so precious, and it is unbelievable. I don't disagree with you. Yeah, we're going to have a final comment. Yeah.
Very nice apartment.
Yeah.
You like to have nice apartments.
Yeah.
So instead of thinking about going over there and showing, or I say to him, have you read the movie she wanted to go over there?
Rambam, yeah, Maimonides.
How he's against
it. Oh, totally. Frightening.
So he said, you know how they talk in Yiddish, you know, me
hard. Yeah, but it suits you. You spend the whole day in yeshiva learning Rambam. So I know, I've heard that comment. We don't hold of it. I know. And Rambam will come back today, and he won't get an aliyah in most of our shuls because of that. Because people will consider him to be much too extreme. Because what does he say? What's extreme, Rambam? He says, talks about the middle ground. Don't go one way. And people cannot stand it. It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. Yeah. He appears in another school. Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Starting from.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a terrible thing. Yeah. And there was there've been so many stories which have been really frightening of things. There was a rabbi in Israel who was from the more modern crowd, the Mizrahi crowd, who was tipped to become the chief rabbi of Israel. And he unfortunately was involved with this type of activity. He was sent away. There was a committee that was made to send this guy out of the out of Yerushalayim, and he's been living in the north of Israel, and he started messing around again. And this committee, my wife's cousin is on this committee, he's a psychologist, and he was involved with it. And he says, nothing we can do, we've just got to say that this guy is now absolutely the equivalent of what you call cherem, if you can do it today, excommunication equivalent, and he's not to be allowed to come anywhere near children, to be involved in education. This was a man who spent his whole life in education. So who knows what he was doing for all those years when it wasn't, you know, people didn't speak about it, people covered it up. And eventually he will go to jail. It's going to happen because the court case is happening. Yeah.
So how much is a professional person not in charge of services? The reason I ask this is, I read recently in the paper that lawyers who are involved in bankruptcy cases
charge
as much as $1,000
an hour. An hour, yeah.
Is that allowed?
Yeah. Now again, I think the answer there is that there will be, if you go to a dayan of a Jewish court, he will say that this is a situation where you have to go by the standard of what is done in the country. It's called, in Hebrew, Dina de Malchuta. Dina de Malchuta is something where, you know, there is a... I mean, you go online now, you find everything on the internet, and you'll see that the average will be X. Maybe he's charging over the average, and then you would say, according to Jewish law, that's wrong. So he has to find what is the average. Of course, it depends on the speciality of what he's doing. So I think the answer is that without sort of quoting numbers, I think that the lawyer who is honest, I don't deny that, you know, in the society this is what they're charging, but be honest about which figure. Don't go for the high one, don't go for the low one, you go somewhere in the middle. Back to what Maimonides said, you always look for the middle path. And I think that's the way it should be. I know that if you find a lawyer who you know is charging exorbitant price, then you go to another lawyer. All right, sometimes you have to go to the best lawyer and pay the price when it's an extreme circumstance, but there are many cases where it's not quite like that. And one has to be, you know, you say in Latin, caveat emptor, buyer beware. All right, and that's something, it's hard, it's very hard to get that right.
Even Medicare, they don't know what that charge.
Oh.
And then Medicare doesn't pay them as much.
I know, because so they always bump it up. They bump it up. I know, and they bump it out. And that again is a whole system based on cheating. And again, so it's endemic, and we particularly, I find myself as an educator being challenged by this, because it's filtering into the school system, as I said, in terms of kids' behavior.
Oh, I know someone that told me that this is important.
Yeah.
Because this is outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she really did. She went.
And they did something
that's
about it. Yeah. Yeah, and report. Yeah, that's maybe the way. Certainly, in terms of reporting cases, you know, sort of wrongdoing, one has to. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I feel like we've ended on a very bad note, and I wanted to end on a good note. The good note is that thank God there are so many good people who do understand. We're in this world to make a Kiddush Hashem, to really do something positive. And I think that's the message that I hope comes out of this. That please God, we are producing a generation of very fine students. This is not the majority. The cheats are not the majority. And I don't ever want them to be even a large minority. I want them to be individualized. And eventually that they will understand through education and through example, from home and from wherever, that it's wrong. And if that's the case, then we're on the right track. I wanted to end on an up note, because otherwise we'll go away feeling depressed. And I don't want to feel too depressed. Mirza Hashem, tomorrow we'll talk a bit about the whole challenge of money and wealth. In the end of the day, how do we deal with it? We're a very affluent society in terms of Jewish history, and that creates its own challenges. We'll talk about that, please God, tomorrow. Thank you very much.